Last year at this time, and I have a photo to prove it, we were buried under snow. We haven't had a winter this warm since the 70s, and we might even break a record for warmth. I keep hearing people say, I'm not going to complain about it, but it's a little weird. It's kind of disquieting and unexpected. We are used to dealing with cold and snow. We are professionals at it. We pride ourselves on it. This midwinter time north of the equator, it happens for us in December, can be a tough time of year. The more north you are, the shorter the days, the longer the nights, the colder the temperatures. Nowadays, we have central heat and electric lights and fresh food that is shipped in. So it's not as hard as it used to be. But the shortening of days is still something that we cannot do much about. It's apparent to all of us when at 4:30, it's already dark outside. Many cultures and faiths have stories and celebrations for this time of year, something to break up the monotony of the cold and the gray and the cold and the gray. In many Celtic-based traditions of neo-paganism, there is the enduring legend of the battle between the Oak King and the Holly King. These two mighty rulers fight for supremacy as the wheel of the year turns at each season. At the winter solstice, or Yule, the shortest day and longest night, the Oak King conquers the Holly King and then reigns until midsummer. Once the summer solstice arrives, the Holly King returns to do battle with the Old King and defeats him. Often these two are portrayed in familiar ways. The Holly King frequently appears as a woodsy version of Santa Claus. Or perhaps Santa is a cleaned-up version of the Holly King. He dresses in red, wears a sprig of holly in his tangled hair, and is sometimes depicted as driving a team of 8 stags. The Oak King, an 8, as you will hear later on, is an important number. The Oak King is portrayed as a fertility god and occasionally appears as the Green Man or other lord of the forest. Ultimately, while these two do battle all year long, they are two essential parts of a whole. Despite being enemies, without one, the other would no longer exist. Winter solstice, December 21st, the rebirth of the sun or the Oak King. On this day, the light is reborn and we celebrate the renewal of the light of the year. But we can't forget the Holly King. Why else do we decorate our halls with boughs of holly? The Holly King may have lost his midwinter struggle, but he is not gone. He is the god of transformation and the one who brings us to birth in new ways. Why do you think we make New Year's resolutions? We want to shed our old ways and give way to the new. Astrologically, Saturn rules at this time. Saturn rules Capricorn, which is the sign that starts at the winter solstice and where celebrations with food and gift exchanges happen during the Roman celebration of Saturnalia. The masters would serve the servants in a celebration of role reversals. Nevertheless, this was a celebration of abundance and renewal. Somewhere, somehow, in the middle of winter, when snow covers the ground, when warmth has gone and the cold has sunk in, when even the sun seems to be hiding most days, there is a rebirth of the Sun King. At the moment of that rebirth, we cannot fully see that the wheel has turned, but there is a hope that once again, what has happened before will happen again. Once again, life will come from death, light will spring from dark, and again, once again, we will have another chance. Each year, for me at least, in Central New York, the turning of the wheel, this return of light, is just still a little bit unexpected. Or if not unexpected, it is at least an immense relief. We still have the worst part of winter to experience, as the view out our window shows us. We know there will be snow and cold and ice no matter what it looks like outside right now. But there will be more light with that snow. It will dance and shimmer off the crystals of ice in the snow and assure me that the warmth of spring really is not that far away. Many of us grew up being told the Christmas story of the birth of Jesus and maybe even believing it. We are in that time of the year of Advent, that time of preparation for Christmas. Most UUs I talk to have an easier time with Christmas than with Easter. For one, Christmas rarely falls on a Sunday morning, and we don't give up our whole Sunday service to it. But it's also about a baby, about joy and hope, and about loving one's fellow humans. But it is so much more than that. At the time when the story of Jesus' birth says he was born, the Jews were living in an occupied country. Judea was a Jewish country occupied by Romans. Most Jews were not Roman citizens, and although they had a few special dispensations from the Romans, they were living in an occupied territory where it was dangerous to be a Jew. There were prophecies of a Messiah who would come and deliver them from their oppressors. This Messiah would come in power and strength, enough power to vanquish the colonial oppressors. The Christian story that is told says that Jesus is the Messiah come to deliver the Jews, and all humankind for that matter. But instead of a powerful world leader, we are presented with a baby. Just a baby. Not even a special baby. This baby was wrapped in swaddling clothes, nursed at his mother's breast, laid in a stable, dependent on other human beings for its safety. Born poor and destitute from Nazareth, the backwater of backwaters was what Nazareth was. And imagine yourself, Mary or Joseph. They had their time of expectation, 9 months of it, but it was not easy expectation. Should Joseph send Mary off? Do they hide the pregnancy, squelch the rumors, pick up and move to a new town and start over? And then there was that angel. Really? Mary's supposed to be carrying a Messiah? And yet they did wait. They did open their hearts to this unorthodox pregnancy and unorthodox birth with its unorthodox setup. As an aside, I have to tell you that each of the births of my children were magical and special and amazing, but I am clear there were no heavenly choruses. And I am pretty sure had I heard one, I would have asked the doctor for a psychiatric visit. But the story goes that Mary and Joseph went with the flow and accepted what was unexpected and did their best with it. Midwinter miracles are not limited to Christians or pagans. Our Jewish brethren celebrate Hanukkah. I told the story during our time for all ages. Hanukkah is not 7 days, but 8 days. Why eight? Remember, I told you this number would be important. Why eight and not seven? A week is 7 days long, and many, many cultures have a seven-day week, even cultures that are independent from one another. It's kind of easy to see why a lunar month is 28 days, and often the phases of the moon sort of naturally break into seven-day segments. And the number seven had mystical significance for the Babylonians. It was associated with the seven heavenly bodies, the sun, moon, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, and Saturn. For this reason, some believe marking rituals every seventh day became important. A seven-day week based on these same celestial bodies was adopted as far away as Japan and ancient China. 7 days a week is the expected. So why 8 days in Hanukkah? I'll pull from my childhood. The Beatles wrote a song called 8 Days a Week. Not about Hanukkah, but about love. The phrase didn't even get invented about love. The story goes that they were so tired. They were working so hard. Someone asked them what it was like, and one of them said they were working 8 days a week. They seemed to be creating more time. There was a vastness and an infinity to their work that seemed like 8 days a week. Perhaps the story of Hanukkah is not just about the victory of the Maccabees over the Greeks. Perhaps it is also about how sometimes when we are in the midst of the unexpected, time stands still. We seem to stand outside of time. We can see the infinity of time, or at least get a glimpse of it. Maybe the 8 days of Hanukkah speak to how the love of this world lives on beyond or outside the mundane of this world. But this is a tough year to hold up hope and expectation in the face of all we hear and know. I'd like to read you an extended quote from a blog I read called The Millennial Pastor. In it, you might hear the word Advent and God. Feel free to translate those into time of preparation and love, or whatever other translation works for you. You might also hear a few cuss words. If there was ever a time that called for cussing from the pulpit, I believe the time is now. He writes, "This year, Advent has not felt so hopeful. This year, I feel like I am being dragged into Advent, and the hope and anticipation just isn't there. Instead, all the messy, crappy, broken stories of God's people that we hear in Advent are hitting too close to home. Terrorism, shootings, bombs, political leaders vowing revenge feels all too close to the world of the seeking crowds, the oppressive world of tyrant kings, the violent world of occupied Israel. Violence being condoned towards women and their bodies simply because they bear the child of a man sounds too much like the possible stoning that Mary could have endured had Joseph chosen to dismiss her. A pregnant and unmarried woman was basically worthless and damaged goods, a sentiment too many entitled white men still feel about women. Syrian refugees fleeing the exact part of the world that the Holy Family was forced to flee because of violent rulers being fearful of young boys growing into terrorists just feels eerie. Somehow this year we all became the innkeepers who turned the Holy Family away because they were too different and unsafe. The callous brutality of Herod and the Romans feels like the unwillingness of American politicians to consider the smallest modicum of gun control. Royal death squads sent to murder infant boys are the price Herod paid for power and money. Daily mass shootings are the price we pay for an unregulated gun industry. Advent stories are coming to us in the news as often as they are coming from the Bible this year. Advent has always beautifully shown us the interweaving of incarnation and reality. But this year, the stories we read, preach, and hear in the church are reality in the world. We have become a people waiting for and in need of a Messiah. Advent is our reality. We are living out Advent in real time. And maybe that is why we need Advent more than ever. Without Advent, our current troubles make celebrating Christmas a farce. Without Advent, our current troubles would be all there is in this world. Without Advent, our current troubles would eclipse any glimpse of God at work among us. Advent is sucking this year because the world is sucking this year. Somewhere between racist political campaigns in America, ISIS, Paris, gun violence, climate change realities, and all the other stuff our world is suffering from, the illusory veneer of the Christmas season was stripped from us. And maybe that is the point. The stories of our faith and the stories of other faiths let us know that when it is darkest out, the sun still rises. When all the world around us seems engulfed in violence, bigotry, and oppression, there is a love so strong, so vibrant, so earth-shakingly steadfast that even a baby living in that love can change the world. When we are down to our last resource and we can count the hours until we have no more, there is more. There is more love somewhere. There is more hope within ourselves and within our communities. There is a saving message that we can bring to this world at this time and remind them that it is love and only love that transforms, never the power of principalities. Let us this season prepare ourselves to take that completely unexpected message out into the world. In a world without end, may this be so.